All right. Welcome back to the Just Mets podcast. We are here with you in still the early phases of the off season. I'm Rich McLeod, joined as always by my co-host, Andrew Claudio. Andrew, how you doing this week?
I'm good, Rich. Totally quiet, not at all frustrating by minuscule roster or coaching moves week for the New York Mets. But it's exciting to be back after one full week. I was glad that I made it through one full week. You decided to keep me around for a second week.
We did it.
And I want to say thank you to everybody that said nice things about me and about us and about this new collaboration that we've entered into. And I listened to the coffee show. Sorry, I don't know. Morning Coffee is the official name of your Saturday show. Off-season coffee. I'm calling it the coffee show going forward.
The coffee show.
Shout out to Kurt. I did hear your shout out about Next Stop Willits Point. Much appreciated. And I hope you're along for this journey with us as well. How are you, Rich?
I'm good. And yeah, just want to echo what you said. Shout out to everybody who supported the show in the last week. We've got like 200 new subscribers here on our YouTube page. If you're watching the video, by the way, shameless plug, if you are watching this on YouTube, please subscribe to our channel. It's super free here. Throw us those likes if you got them. If you're listening to us on one of the podcast apps, please make sure you're subscribed there. If you'd be kind enough to give us a 5-star review, we'd very much appreciate it as we are moving forward with this endeavor. But you kind of hinted at it, and we will have like a larger theme and topic to get into for this show. And if you're looking at the title, you already know what that is, but I won't give it away anyways. But first, I kind of want to hit on some of the things that did happen this week. Not a super busy week. I think we're still in a little bit of that pre-offseason quiet period. But there was a bit of frustration earlier this week. And I think probably for the first time in Mets history, it was over a first base coach. And that was, of course, the news that Antoine Richardson and the fired Jeremy Hefner both wind up getting hired, of course, in the division by the Atlanta Braves. I spoke on this a little bit on a couple of the Patreon pods earlier this week. But Andrew, this is kind of your first opportunity to speak on it, especially since you recorded your instant reaction for YouTube Shorts. So I kind of want to give you the floor here.
Yeah. So, but when I posted the Mets therapy reaction, and it was, like you said, very instant. Mm-hmm. I hadn't heard Antoine Richardson comments to the media. I hadn't heard or read any of the reporting that came out afterwards that it was very clearly about money. There's conflicting reporting out there that, like, it's because of his pension that when they initially talked to him after they made their decisions to fire most of the staff, they said to him, "We'd like to bring you back. Here's a number." And he said, "I'd like to go test the market, but I'll circle back if I want to come back." While he was gone, they filled a lot of their spots. And then when he came back, they said, "We'd like to bring you back, but we don't have a spot that has a pension available anymore." And that's according to the New York Post. But then there's like conflicting reporting with quotes from Richardson that has nothing to do with the pension. It's a salary number that was the issue. And I got to be honest, Rich, and again, to plug the Patreon, I kind of lean Joe DiMaio here in that. Let's play a game. Let's just play a quick game. If you and I can just jump into this, let's name as many first base coaches in Mets history as we can. I'll go first. Antoine Richardson.
Tim Tuffle.
Was he a first base coach or a third base coach?
I think he did both.
Okay.
Mookie Wilson. He was around for a while.
So we got to the second round and we can already can't name. I can name a third and that's it is where I'll go with it.
Okay, go for it.
Ricky Henderson. And it was like the funniest stretch of Mets history where Ricky was just telling Reyes, just go. Like, that was his whole advice about his first base coach advice. I think where I'm getting at is it's so much less about the Mets lost a first base coach that was an obvious positive to the team, and one of the things that went right, of like the seven things that went right last year, the running game was the number one thing outside of Juan Soto being Juan Soto and Pete Alonso having a bounce back year, the running game being revolutionized was the thing that I think a lot of us wanted to keep going. I think this is more about David Stearns and the lack of trust this fan base has in him. The fact that if he does this a year ago, like if Antoine Richardson's contract was up and he just like they couldn't come to a number, we'd just all be like, you know what? It sucks, but it's a first base coach. Who cares? We trust Stearns, but coming off one of the worst collapses in franchise history, mm-hmm. and really entering into a very contentious offseason where it seems from some of the reporting that some fan favorites might not be able to come back based off of some philosophical beliefs and differences that Stearns may have in how he wants to build this team. This ends up being one of the things and a microcosm of the lack of faith that I think a lot of the fan base has in the Wonder Boy, David Stearns, and the front office in general.
Yeah, I think, you know, ultimately, is this something we're really going to be thinking about in July when the Mets are in a pennant race and like, oh man, like if only Antoine Richardson was still here? Probably not. I think this will probably fade. But to your point, we're in the early stages of the offseason. We're coming off a bad year. The Mets haven't done anything good yet. So this is the first bit of news that comes out and people are still on edge. People have not gotten over it. It hasn't been that long. It's been about a month and a half since it all came to an end in 2025. So people are pissed and they're kind of looking for reasons to be pissed, and they were given one, even if it is a bit smaller.
Yeah. So just a couple other first base coaches that I think some people will be yelling at us for not mentioning. Like Bud Harrelson was a first base coach for the Mets around the time that I started being a Mets fan. So I should remember that. Sandy Alomar Sr. was a first base coach of the Mets. Howard Johnson was a first base coach.
Yeah.
Luis Alicea, Tom Goodwin was the first base coach when they went to the World Series in 2015. And then Glenn Sherlock, who was on the coaching staff as recently as a season ago, is no longer with the staff and used to be a first base coach.
Those are the tough ones to remember when they kind of wind up playing, like filling a bunch of those positions. Yeah. Like Tim Tuffle was one of those guys, which is funny because that was how he was as a player too. He basically played every position, coached every position.
Yeah.
Forgot about Sherlock.
Look, the last thing I'll say on this, I know that Atlanta's the boogeyman. They're certainly the boogeyman for me as well. Is there a world where, because we know what the strategy is, like the walking lead, and it, like, we actually would know how to defend against it better and scout against the Braves running game better because we know Antoine Richardson's tell? And this, look, I didn't say it last year because I was just happy about what the Mets running game was. It also doesn't seem like the most difficult thing to stop. I got to be honest. The whole season that the Mets were stealing all these bases, I was sharing in Keith Hernandez's frustration. It's like, why haven't teams figured out how to stop this? And then there's this one stretch in September where three straight times that they got to the walking lead, they were picked off, mm-hmm. and the mandate clearly came down. All right, like let's chill on the walking leads for a little bit. I think there is a world where the Mets are actually more prepared against this because they know what the secret is, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it probably all washes out because you can do the other side of it too. If Goodwin knows what each base runner is going to do on the Mets and can tell the Braves what they're going to do.
You mean Richardson? You said Goodwin.
Yes, Richardson. Yeah, yeah. Oh, geez. Talking about too many first base coaches.
Yeah, I confused you. It's okay. Ricky Henderson. That's who we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Ricky Henderson, Braves first base coach. Mm-hmm. Will be able to also identify, you know, this is what Soto does when he goes to steal. This is what Lindor does, so on and so forth. Can also probably identify some stuff in Mets pitchers, but I do kind of wonder if just in general, now that the league has more of a book on this after a year, is this something that can really go on at the pace that it was with the Mets last year for an extended period of time? Or is this one of those things, like you see in football, right? A coach kind of figures out a loophole and it either gets outlawed or teams figure out how to shut it down. You know, is this, you know, it's not the tush push because they still haven't figured that shit out. But is this something similar to that where, in 2026, teams are way more ready for it, especially with the Braves and when the Mets come to town and it starts to get shut down a little bit by getting picked off a lot. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah.
You did allude earlier to some other things in terms of some fan favorites, and the biggest news, I guess, actual news of the week, though it's not surprising, is Edwin Diaz and Pete Alonso both officially opt out. Diaz, we were pretty sure he was going to, but he was nice enough after game 162 to not say he was going to do it. Pete Alonso told us right away that he was going to do it and annoyed me in the moment, but I was annoyed for other reasons. Mets do extend the qualifying offer, which is now slightly above $22 million to Edwin Diaz, but there have been some reports, I think, that have been interesting here that concern both of these players. So this first one is from Will Salmon of The Athletic talking about Edwin Diaz. He said, quote, "The expectation based on conversations with league sources is for Diaz to test the market this time around. If you remember in 2022, he signed before free agency even officially started. The Mets have already shown some interest in re-signing Diaz, a league source said, but it is unclear how far the club will go to retain him." So not surprising, not really what I want to hear right now, but let's talk about Diaz first. And he'll have a market for sure. He is the best closer. You could argue the best relief pitcher in baseball, but you know, he's a little bit older. He's going to be demanding a high contract. The Mets are going to be pursuing him. And now he does have that draft pick compensation attached. What did you think of both the news this week and then the little color that we got from Will Salmon there?
I mean, it's similar to what we said last week in that, again, this kind of goes back to the Stearns and the trust thing. The last line, the last part of this from Salmon about it's unclear how far the club will go to retain him. Yeah. Better be pretty friggin' far. David Stearns, like this, there's no real, we'll eventually do a show about the closer position and the closers available. It might actually be next week that we talk about the bullpen options that are available and how the Mets rebuild this bullpen. I don't have, and you've said this, I've said this, I'll just re-say it again. I don't have a number that Diaz could get that would be too much. I don't have the
agreed
the walk away number in my mind, at least. And it helps that the Mets are already paying him the most. He was the highest paid closer, I believe. If not him, it's Josh Hader. And it was by like a couple million. Just like we're talking like 4 for 85, or if you want to say he needs to, if he demands that he needs 100, okay, 4 for 100, and then he becomes a nine figure closer for the second time because he signed for 5-102 the last time. I know what we're going to talk about spot track and some of the market values in a little bit. I'm okay paying above market value for the best reliever that the franchise has ever had. That one that's still productive, one that still has like high 90s stuff, and one that just there is not a good replacement for on the current market unless David Stearns has a rabbit he wants to pull out of his hat. So that was my overall thought, that it better be pretty far that the club is willing to go to retain him.
Yeah, there's no excuse. Like, there's too many reasons, you know, to sign him to not do it. You know, he has pitched here. He has pitched well in New York. He has pitched well in the postseason. And there has been nothing he has shown you since, you know, the first year he was here to give you any indication that he is deteriorating, that he is aging negatively, that he is more of an up and down type of pitcher. Like, since that first season in 2019, he has been very good to elite with, you know, his worst season, I think, was probably 2024, and he was still really good. He was just more of like a heart attack type closer. There's no excuse to not bring him back. I think the bigger thing, and I would say the bigger alarm bell here, is the Pete stuff. And I think we have a quote here from Pat Ragazzo of Sports Illustrated, who wrote earlier this week, according to a rival NL scout, the Mets recognize that their clubhouse is in need of a culture shift following last season's slow collapse. The expectation is that the Mets will float utility man Jeff McNeil on the trade market, not a surprise, and let franchise cornerstone Pete Alonso walk in free agency unless he takes a team-friendly deal. Thoughts?
I'll go on record right now. I would like Pete Alonso to remain with the New York Mets.
Mm-hmm.
I will plug the Patreon again, $5 a month gets you bonus episodes as well as the coffee show every Saturday. And the conversation you had with Joe DiMeo about how many DHs the Mets currently have, it's why I will understand if there is a walkaway number with Pete Alonso. I think I said this last week, but I would like Pete Alonso to be with the New York Mets for the next 4, I could even be talked into 5 years. If he gets 5 years at like insane above market value, if he gets 6 years or 7 years and the Mets do a good job pivoting to a different direction that doesn't have a liability defensively at a third position in the field, then I will accept it. The words run prevention have become the theme of this offseason because of how many times David Stern said it in that last press conference. I saw Joel Sherman go on MLB.com and completely speculate what that means. Would love it if you did some reporting one of these days, Joel. But I do think that there is some truth to the speculation that, well, if you're all about run prevention, that doesn't really sound like you want to bring back Pete Alonso. I would just counter with, how about you go improve the pitching staff that you put together? I actually disagree, I think, with you and with some of the people that have put the notion out there about how, did the offense get frustrating last time? Yes. Last year, yes. They scored like 5 fewer runs than the Mariners. So they had like the same offense as a team that was 7 outs away from getting to the World Series. They lost last year because their run prevention was bad on the mound. And we will spend the most of this show talking about how bad the rotation was and why they need to improve it, both at the top and in the middle. Where that leaves with Pete Alonso, maybe this is more just me now turning a question back to you. Mm-hmm. I think they will struggle to replace like 80 extra base hits if they let him walk. But like, what's the walkaway number for you? Like, what is the actual, man, the Mets couldn't have matched that. That's just not responsible team building.
Yeah. I mean, there's no number they can't match. Is there a prudent number? I don't know if I have a specific number. I was thinking when you're talking about like 4 to 5 years, maybe is like right around the max. And look, if you're looking at it, and Pete Alonso last year essentially had about $30 million annual value on his contract, I'm going to assume he's looking for something like that again, if not a little bit more, because it's a year later. He had a really good season. This is probably the final chance he's going to have to leverage his play into like a real contract. So if we just speculate that, let's be conservative, because this is Scott Boras we're talking about. He got Pete Alonso $30 million after a bad year last year. That gives you like 5 for $150 if you're not going past that. It feels slightly too rich, but not completely egregious to me. I don't know that I could do, I don't know that I would feel great about doing more, even though I want him back. And it also depends, again, the whole thing is going to hinge on this. If you don't bring him back, what's the backup plan? If the backup plan is good, I can give a little bit more grace there. But if it's not, it's a completely different story. And maybe I won't care that the other team gave him 5 for $170. You know, it is going to depend.
I think we have the same range, like 5 150, 5 155 is like the number. You know, it's also like, I think it varies for me. If you gave him 3 for $100, I'd be fine. Like the AAV, if you go shorter on years, if it's 4 for $125, 5 for, like, you see what I'm saying? Like if they go to a higher AAV, but shorter in years, I'm for it. The moment we start getting into like 6 180 is when, and even like 5, like you said, 5 170, is where I think I'm hoping you're paying your front office this amount of money to be able to replace him. Not in the aggregate. I think you need to go out and look at an Alex Bregman or a Cody Bellinger. I'm with you on the Schwarber thing, by the way. I just don't see a spot for, I don't see how he fits with the Mets, even if it were to be a short term thing. But yeah, I
DH eligible player.
We're literally talking about run prevention. You talk about a guy that is only about run creation. So
right.
And then, I think we're around the same number for a 5-year deal. We will eventually do a deep dive on the first base position, the DH position,
yep,
and the options that are available to them. But as far as this report is concerned, look, the actual reaction I have is that maybe this is the last question I have towards you. Like, what's your confidence level on November 11th?
Well, it's funny,
November 9th.
It's funny that you bring this up, because I was actually going to say to you, maybe we should start all these podcasts with a confidence meter on Pete and Edwin until both of those guys sign. That could be an interesting check-in, because I'm sure it'll fluctuate every week. As of right now, if I was pressed, I would say I don't think Pete Alonso is coming back.
What percentage? Let's do the meter. That's fun.
Okay, let's do the meter.
What's your meter? So
are we saying the meter is percentage that he will return?
Percentage they'll both be a Met next year. That this first player, Pete Alonso, will be a Met next year.
30%.
I'm at 20. So we're at, ooh, I'm even okay. Less. Yeah. Okay. Now Edwin.
Give it another week.
We'll check in each week. We'll be here every Sunday.
Yeah. Edwin Diaz, I'd put, just to put a bow on that, I'd put it like 60-65.
I'm at like 60-65. I'll say 65 I'm a little more confident that.
Yeah.
I just the moment he goes to the market and says, "Oh, there's no other closer this good, I should bring him back," then that'll be that, you know?
Yeah. Last bit of news. I don't think we need to analyze this at all. But Pete Alonso and Juan Soto do win Silver Slugger Awards. Didn't really help them win this year, but they both win Silver Slugger. First time in a while that the Mets have had multiple Silver Sluggers. Mm-hmm. And Juan Soto, top three finalists for MVP, which I think is deserved, and I think he should finish third. I would say that's fair.
It's Ohtani. It's
Ohtani, Schwarber, Soto.
I would have him finishing second, but I actually just don't think it matters who finishes.
Yeah,
second.
I would agree.
One is Ohtani. Rich, can you name the last five Mets to win a Silver Slugger?
Oh,
before Pete Alonso and Juan Soto.
I mean, probably not, but I'll give it a shot.
Let's see. I was shocked going through the list. Like, I got a couple, but I was like, oh, that's right. This is because the most fascinating part about this announcement to me was that this was Pete Alonso's first Silver Slugger. Mm. Like, a guy not that
even the year you had 50 something homers.
Shout out to Freddie Freeman and Paul Goldschmidt, who have just owned the position. Also, shout out to Matt Olson, who won it, I think, last year when he had 50 plus home runs. But yeah,
I mean, Lindor had to have won one.
Won the last 2 years he won it. So he's the one that won it most recently. And I'm curious if you get this is the one that shocked me. The one that has won it more recently past Lindor. I can give you the year if you want.
Yeah, give me the year.
2022.
Starling Marte?
No. Infielder/outfielder.
Jeff McNeil
won the Silver Slugger.
He won a batting title.
Then you got to go back to 2016.
Oh, God. Everybody was hurt that year.
Except for
Cespedes probably won.
Yoenis Cespedes.
He was hurt too, but he was really good.
Yeah. Had 33 home runs that year. Then you got to go back to 2008.
Delgado?
No. Delgado never won a Silver Slugger for the Mets.
That's correct. Delgado was so fucking good.
He was
crazy. David Wright. That David was his Wright, best season.
2007, 2008, and then
Beltran
won 2006, 2007. Okay. To do the housekeeping, 2006 first base Silver Slugger, Ryan Howard. 2007 first base Silver Slugger, Prince Fielder. 2008 first base Silver Slugger, Albert Pujols. Mm. So, but the Mets getting two in the same year, the first time it's happened since 2007 when David Wright and Carlos Beltran both won it.
Very ironic. Similar season, isn't it?
Ironic that it's a similar season in how both seasons ended. Yeah, that's a little trivia for you. I was shocked that it was Pete Alonso's first.
Slugger, I would have just assumed.
But also looking at the other first baseman. Oh, yeah. Future Hall of Famer Freddie Freeman, future Hall of Famer Paul Goldschmidt. Like, these are warranted candidates.
Those awards are also always interesting. The Silver Slugger and the Gold Gloves in particular. Like, every year there's a guy that you're like, really? That guy? Mm-hmm. That guy won? That's interesting. So I'd be curious to see what the process is for voting for some of that stuff. But ultimately, it doesn't matter. Good for those guys. Happy for them. Nice to see Soto finish top three in MVP. There's not that many Mets that have even done that. Although back-to-back seasons, the Mets have had a top three MVP finisher, which is kind of crazy.
A top three MVP finisher that did not make the All-Star team.
2 years in a row. That's right.
Yeah.
The Lindor, I find even more egregious last year than Soto this year, but they're both pretty bad.
Only because the Mets had like 3-4 All-Stars this year. Do I think it's understandable they didn't want to add a fifth Met, although the Mets like were in a playoff spot when the season
they were one of
broke,
the better
so
teams
it's not like they were bad at that point, so it's whatever. The Mets had one All-Star last year, and it was Pete Alonso in a down year. So that's where I get frustrated about Lindor. And thankfully, he just used that as motivation to have his best season as a Met. So,
and to finish this out, they really only made Alonso an All-Star that year because, one, there's a minimum, and they picked him over Lindor so he could hit in the home run derby. Lindor has to have made it, right, if they don't do that for Alonso.
So it's not a requirement that you have to make the All-Star team to be in the home run derby. They I think they had too many shortstops and needed another first baseman, to your point.
Yeah. I think Pete Alonso did say, though, he would not participate in the home run derby if he didn't make the All-Star team. So, mm-hmm.
Well, it works. Okay.
Some potential shenanigans. No offense to Pete, more of Lindor should have made the team. Anyways, that's basically everything that happened this week. Nothing too crazy. Definitely going to be interesting to see what goes on going forward. But if you listened last week, we did our top five questions that we had for the Mets going into the offseason. What we really want to do these next couple of weeks as the offseason slowly heats up is to kind of try to deep dive into each of those topics a little bit more. Andrew, I'm going to throw this over to you to drive the rest of the way, but tell us what we're getting into this week.
Well, so like you said, last week we asked the most important question of the offseason, and it's, will the Mets acquire an ace? And does that mean, like, what is the definition of an ace? Well, where can they find one, whether it be free agency or a trade? Is it the cost worth it for them to acquire said ace? Let's start at the top, because I think this conversation leads more to like the entire pitching rotation in general. Mm-hmm. What do you consider an ace upgrade, Rich?
In terms more like philosophically, you're asking, or specific players?
Let's do both. Yeah, like, what do you consider like an improvement? Like, what would be an upgrade as an ace to the Mets?
I mean, what would be an upgrade? Uh-huh. Maybe the bar setting a little bit too low. I think the way you view an ace is, and maybe this is too rigid, is just like that there's no debate that they are one. You can debate where they lie on the pantheon of all the aces in the league, if they're the best pitcher in baseball or not. That's likely always going to be up for debate, unless you're 2018 era Jacob DeGrom, although people want to debate that too. But there's no doubt who's starting game one, who's the guy that's going to stop the losing skid, who's going to give you those seven innings when you desperately, desperately need it. Kind of like what Nolan McLean was for a couple of games, but, you know, more established. That's kind of how I have always viewed an ace, not having to wonder if they are one or not, but just like knowing in my gut, like, yeah, that's the Johan Santana was the ace. Jacob DeGrom was the ace. Harvey, for like two individual seasons, I felt that way. That's how I see it. Do you feel any differently?
Not necessarily. I think what's most fascinating about this conversation about this team is that 2023, the ace was Kodai Senga. 2024, the ace was Sean Manaea. Last season, for the first 4.5 months, the ace was David Peterson. All three of those players are still under contract and in the rotation. And it is unanimous amongst the fan base. They don't have an ace, and neither of them can be counted on to bounce back into ace form under any circumstances. There is no trust or belief in any of those three to, even if they have a bounce back season, to regain ace form. Mm-hmm. And it's why, like, the question that I'm asking is more, is it just better than Nolan McLean? Is it as good as Nolan McLean? Because maybe in the aggregate, everybody can be a productive arm come playoff time. Or how much overhaul is really necessary? And I just think it's fascinating. We technically have guys that we've considered an ace before already in the rotation. And I don't think, and I know I don't think anybody else really considers any of these guys an ace anymore.
Yeah, I think to that point, a lot of those guys, you know, Senga's a little bit differently, especially in his rookie year, because you didn't know what you had yet. There was some promise there, but pushing him aside, you know, the Manaea and the Peterson, and even first half Senga this year, they were more the aces by like default, because you have to have a quote ace. But for them, it was really just like, who's your pitcher that is not the worst, you know, your least bad pitcher. And for the Mets these last couple of years, it's kind of been more like that. You know, Manaea was awesome in 2024, but, you know, we don't know how sustainable that is. That was for half a season. Peterson was awesome for half a season. Senga was awesome this year for half a season. The, you know, aces are reliable. And these Mets have been put in positions where there's just too much expected of them. And I think if all these guys can stay, well, Senga TBD, but these guys can theoretically all stay in the rotation and it'd still be okay. They just need to be further back in the rotation. And that slotting back changes the whole picture of things. Personally, I would say the Mets haven't had a real ace since 2022, and that was Max Scherzer. And DeGrom didn't pitch most of that year, so it was really Scherzer that year. So we've gone, you know, 3-4 seasons now without really having that, in my opinion.
I agree with that opinion, by the way, which is really the point I'm making, is that we've had a lot of guys miscast as the ace of the team over the past 3 years, and if you can...
Miscast is well said.
Move people down the pecking order, which includes Nolan McLean, because I'm ready to say he can be the best pitcher on the roster. I'm open to the possibility that he just shows up and gives us 30 starts and starts the All-Star game and has a Garrett Crochet, or I don't want to say Skeens. Skeens is in a different stratosphere, but like the stratosphere right below Skeens, he can be the ace of the team, which would more take me to the place that you need someone as good as Skeens to be the ace with a longer track record, which brings us to what the market looks like. Who are the potential aces available? I put together a list based off of the projected free agents this upcoming season, this offseason, I should say. The projections are courtesy of SpotTrack. This is a site I go to for all my sports financial questions and queries. Because this is an audio medium, I'm just going to list and go through them real quick, Rich. These are the eight highest AAV, average annual value projections on the market this coming off season.
Free agents.
These are the eight highest projected contract AAVs in free agency. So Framber Valdez from the Houston Astros, 6 years, $199 million, $33 million. AAV. Ranger Suarez, 6 years, $161 million, $26.9 million AAV. Dylan Cease, 7 years, $184 million, $26.4 million AAV. Michael King, 4 years, $91 million, $23 million AAV. Lucas Giolito, bit of a forgotten man in this conversation, 3 years, $61 million, $20.4 million AAV. Zach Gallen, 4 years, $74 million. $18.7 million AAV. Shota Imanaga, 4 years, $73 million, $18 million AAV. And then Brandon Woodruff, coming off of a injury riddled couple seasons, 2 years, $34 million, $17.1 million AAV. I tell you, if it was this offseason, I would definitely be open to signing a former Brewer to a 2 year, $34 million contract. Unfortunately, this happened last season, and now Frankie Montas We didn't mention this news. Frankie Montas opted into the second year of his
surprise, day. Surprise.
Yeah. Get well. I do mean this. Like, get well soon, sir. Like, sure. I have no ill will against you as a person, as a baseball player. I hope you never pitch for the New York Mets again. This list tells you what? Your reaction to this list.
And this list tells me that free agency for pitchers sucks most of the time. And you can see that by the projected, and these are probably pretty fair projections for what is available and the need and the cost for these things, that Ranger Suarez is projected to be a $160 million man and likely the second highest paid player, at least per season here. And I don't think he's that kind of pitcher. I don't think you do. I know Joe DiMeo on the Patreon pod was extremely hesitant to give him anything remotely close to this, but I think you see that in a lot of places. I'm extremely surprised that Dylan Cease, after the year that he had, is projected to get a 7-year deal. Cause, and again, maybe this is that like pre-lockout year. Maybe it doesn't work out like this. And, you know, these are just projections about what guys are valued at, not necessarily what they're going to get. I had originally been thinking, oh, Dylan Cease is going to get that like Blake Snell pre deal where he gets the 3-year deal that has opt-outs after every year and resets his market value after a not great season. According to the projections, not going to be that way. So yeah, I see a lot of decent pitchers. I don't think any of these guys are aces at this stage in their career. The one guy that I will point out here that I'm the most interested in, and again, if the Mets went out and signed this guy, I would still trade for somebody who is an ace. But for me, it's Michael King is the most interesting. I know he was a little bit injured this past year. It wasn't as good of a season as he had in 2024, where he was awesome for the Padres. That's the kind of guy that really piques my interest. If, you know, these other guys are going to get what they're projected to get, I hesitate, especially with like a Shoto Imanaga, who was so bad for the Cubs down the stretch.
He was really bad for them down the stretch. The Mets actually got to take advantage of that last week of the season.
Crap out of him.
I actually think both of them, both Michael King and Imanaga, the qualifying offer just scares me off personally.
Yeah, which they probably won't do that.
Yeah, I do. Where I think this leads, and look, I agree that there's three like non-starters. When I say non-starters, like I don't bothers more, not non-starters, because of the context of we're talking about starting pitchers. I want no part of Ranger Suarez at that price. I want no part of Dylan Cease for 7 years at that price. And
Valdez, even that's.
Yeah, Framer Valdez, I think I'm a little more open to it, but I don't think the Mets will consider. If we want to talk about philosophies, I don't think David Stearns is spending 6 years on a 30-year-old lefty. I think the Dylan Cease, the only explanation I have for his price is that he's the only one on this list under the age of 30. Now he's 29 and will be 30 by opening day next season, but it's slim pickings on the free agency market. Rich, which brings us to trades.
This is the meat and potatoes, I think, of this.
So these are 11 names put together by me in some kind of order, but also with the help of SpotTrack, again, based off of projections, as well as the list put together by CBS Sports. The list is Tarik Skubal of the Detroit Tigers, Sonny Gray of the St. Louis Cardinals, Joe Ryan of the Minnesota Twins, Freddie Peralta of the Milwaukee Brewers, has 1 year left on that deal, by the way. Sandy Alcantara and Hunter Green, of the Cincinnati Reds, Sandy Alcantara of the Miami Marlins, Nick Pivetta, which was an interesting name that showed up on the CBS list. I'll explain in a minute. Nick Pivetta just signed a 5-year deal with the San Diego Padres, but they have been slashing payroll like crazy since their owner tragically passed away 2 seasons ago. Mitch Keller, who was a name mentioned at the trade deadline from the Pittsburgh Pirates. Edward Cabrera, who pitched the final game of the season against the New York Mets. And then our old friend Luis Severino. And then of the Sacramento Athletics, not of Oakland. And then Mackenzie Gore of the Washington Nationals. I mean, the name at the top stands out, Rich.
Yeah, I mean, it's Tariq Skubal and the Sunshine Gang here. Like, I think everybody is secondary to him. And until he gets moved or the Tigers come out and say they're absolutely not trading him, this is the guy we're going to be talking about for the next several weeks, if not several months. The major question is he actually available? But if he is, I mean, the Mets have to be all over this. Joe and I talked about this a lot. You and I talked about this a little bit last week too, but the Mets and the Tigers are really good matches in terms of farm systems. Is if he is available, just the Tigers have basically no pitching prospects at all. They have a ton of position player prospects and young position players on their team, whereas the Mets have like four or five very highly ranked pitching prospects or young pitchers at this point in time. And that doesn't even include Nolan McLain, who they're not going to trade for a guy who's a pending free agent. And honestly, I wouldn't really trade him, I think, even for one of these guys that's under a lot of control.
Nolan McLean's not part of this conversation. Nobody on this list I would trade for Nolan McLain. Unless, if they said McLain for Skubal straight up, that is a fascinating conversation to have.
I still would say no.
You're telling me you get to keep everything else. Like, you get to keep Beatty, you get to keep Ton, you get to keep Sproat.
I'll give up the volume so I can keep the 1B pitcher that I think he's going to be.
I think I agree. It's just a fascinating option to consider. If it's one for one, and it falls similarly under the Zach Wheeler for Carlos Beltran, or really it's not even Pete Armstrong for Javier Baez, because Skubal is so much better of a return than Javier Baez. And I'm so much more confident that the Mets will be interested and actually do re-sign Skubal to a long-term deal. It just, I think, then makes the need to re-sign him to a long-term deal that much more important.
Imperative, I would say.
Like, mandatory, I think, would even be the better word.
Yeah. Package aside, which who the hell knows? I think it's going to be something like a Tong, a Sproat, a position player, and maybe a fourth player as well from the minor leagues. But that aside, we were talking about, you know, what is an ace to you? Of all the the eight free agents, the 11 trade target, you got almost 20 guys here. You look at one name.
It's one name.
There's other guys who are, they could be 1Bs. They could be aces. Maybe they're right around that edge. Tariq Skubal, there is no question, right? This is the ace. He may be the best pitcher in all of baseball. He is in that level of conversation. He has been awesome for years. The metrics do not say that he is declining. If you look at guys like Corbin Burnes, who have been in similar positions in recent years, you could see each year the metrics are not pointing in the right direction. That's not happening with Skubal, at least not yet. The guy is a fucking bulldog. He pitches on big stages. He comes through when they needed him. He came through in the postseason. Remember, this was a team that had a collapse worse than the 2007 Mets, gets in the playoffs only because of the expanded field, and Tariq Skubal was a big part of them flipping the script, basically, and beating the Guardians. It's the equivalent of the Mets having played the Phillies in 2007 and flipping the script and beating them because, I don't know, Oliver fucking Perez was really great. They didn't really have great options in 2007. But he is that guy. And if he is available, you have to do everything you possibly can if you're the Mets, and for a lot of other teams too, to get him in the building. He would be the unquestioned ace of this baseball team. And all of a sudden, look at that rotation of Skubal, McLain, Manaea, Peterson, and choose your fifth starter of the other guys who are around. That would look pretty damn good.
Senga and then Holmes, barring they don't. I'm assuming they want to go six guys. I don't think the case for Skubal, I mean, it's very obvious what you're talking about. The fact that it's so far above the others, what Tariq Skubal is, that it's a no-brainer. If Tariq Skubal sweepstakes exist and happen, and my Patreon exclusive episode this week will be a conversation about Tariq Skubal from the Detroit perspective, went and found the biggest name in the Detroit content creation world. You will get to hear from him on Thursday, but it's still to be determined if there even is a Tariq Skubal sweepstakes. What I now want to ask you, just based off the trade market now, because like Sonny Gray is $40 million until 2027. Future allocations is the column that that falls under on.
No.
Okay.
Hot no on Sonny Gray. We've seen him in New York.
I agree for what it's worth.
He's very good out in the Midwest, and I think that's where he belongs. He's not a big city kind of guy.
So Freddie Peralta's 1 year, $8 million. Joe Ryan is, I gotta be honest, I would be all over the Joe Ryan sweepstakes if it was depending on the price, but I really like Joe Ryan with Nolan McLean upside. I mean, he has just extremely nasty stuff. He has done it at the major league level already. Going through some of his highlights during the trade deadline, like if this guy's available, please go get him. Mm-hmm. I think this is under that second category that we're talking about, that not better than McLean, but as good as McLean with a better track record. I would be very open to Joe Ryan if that's a possibility.
Ryan type, I think, is kind of like you have two number two-ish starters at the top, which is still not bad. I would take that if above, you know, going full bust and winding up with nothing. But I'd say, yeah, you look at these two of these lists and the free agents and the trades, I'd say there are only two definite aces, in my opinion, on this list. Obviously, one is Skubal. Hunter Green is the only other one who I would say he is definitely the number one starter on opening day for the Mets if they acquired him. I think everybody else you could have a conversation about McLean or this guy, or they're just automatically below McLean. That being said, similar to Skubal, we don't know if Hunter Green is actually available. There's been some inklings. The Reds, I can't remember if it was their owner or GM, but had some like kind of curious comments when their season came to an end. And obviously they're not one of the higher payroll teams, so that could be something they'd be looking into. But again, he's under control for, I believe, four more seasons on a pretty team-friendly contract, so they don't have to do it. But if he was available, he is the other definite ace of this group. Everybody else is like a, at best, like a 1B, 2A, if not lower caliber guy.
So I'm just going to look up something real quick, but I also, look, Hunter Green signed a 6-year, $53 million deal after his rookie season. He's very cheap until 2029.
He's affordable.
You think trading for 1 year of Tariq Skubal is going to cost a lot? Trading for 3 or 4 years of Hunter Green won't cost the top end talent, but will cost a lot.
Be cheap.
I think I could be convinced that Joe Ryan's on the same level as Hunter Green, personally. I think that there's not that much a difference between the two. There is a difference in the fact that you get Hunter Green until 2029. But if you add in the injury history with Hunter Green and the fact that I think they're both nasty. And I think if you get one, I still think Nolan McLean would be starting on opening day, personally, if you got either one of these guys. But I mean, look, we wouldn't be calling a one guy's a 1A or a 2 and the other guy's a 1A or a 2. Like, I think that's really what this more falls under as far as semantics are concerned. Sandy Alcantara won the Cy Young 3 seasons ago. Looked very good the second half, really the post All-Star break last season, and we saw him final weekend of the season regain that form. Where do you stand on Sandy Alcantara?
I mean, I will say I thought he looked pretty bad against the Mets in the final weekend, and they just couldn't hit in that game. You're thinking of the previous series where he was very, very good against them at Citi Field.
And the Friday night game where all he got was ground ball after ground ball.
I'm telling you, Sandy Alcantara got extremely like BABIP lucky in that game, and the Mets had a ton of guys on base early on. And
first couple innings, I remember the game, and then he settled down and retired the last like 15.
It was when, when Lindor came up in a situation where 99% of the time it's like a 2 or 3 run double. The Mets go up 5-0, and Alcantara's probably pulled from that game. First baseman makes a leaping catch. It was also positioned well, and then the Mets didn't get any base runners for like quite a while after that. He was very much teetering on the edge. All that being said, he was largely very good in the second half after the Marlins decided not to trade him. From the conversations I had had and some reports that had come out, it seemed like, yeah, he was like technically available, but the price was so egregiously high. He wasn't really available. It was more of like, hey, if you'll do something stupid, we'll trade him to you. For any football fans, I think it was probably more of like a Sauce Gardner thing, but the Colts were actually like, hey, we will give you 2 first-round picks for a cornerback who can't get interceptions. So, I believe the Marlins asking price was like the top two prospects in the system, plus like a top 10 prospect and a major league player, something like that. I think they wanted like the equivalent was like McClain and Tong and one of the infielders and another depth prospect. So like quite a lot. So the Marlins decided not to trade him. Now he's probably likely back on the market again. I think he has 2 years left of control at this point. I would definitely be interested in him if Scooble's not really available. I think Alcantara is definitely one of the guys you look at. I would say the top three guys, because I don't think Green is really available here, are probably Scooble, Ryan, and Alcantara. And I would list them in that order. I would put Alcantara third. Would definitely be interested in him. I'm a little bit more concerned about just like the health of his arm. What is the kind of pitcher he's going to be at this point? We haven't seen him put together a full good season since the injuries. So I would be a little bit more nervous about it. I think it's less of a slam dunk. I think he's your number two until proven otherwise. And again, we've seen in the last couple seasons, he can't be prone to blowups more than he was before he got the Tommy John surgery. So yeah, I'd be a little bit more nervous, and I think you're going to have to pay a division tax, but it doesn't take me out on him. It just, again, we talked about after Scooble, it's like there's a drop here and there's a lot less certainty.
Danny Alcantara, over his final 12 starts of the season, including the alleged bad start that Rich is talking about the last weekend of the season, 7-3 with a 77 innings pitched, a 3.13 ERA, and a 3.75 FIP. A lot of home runs, 9 home runs in those 12 starts. So it's not totally what you want, but
yeah,
not a lot of base runners either in those 76 base runners in 77 innings, which is not great, but not terrible. He really does fall under the, like, he would be a 3 with the potential to be a 2 at times on this team, or should be a 3 with the potential to be a 2 at times on this team. The better question regarding Alcantara is, do I have confidence he can regain the innings eating form that I think the Mets are really lacking? Because in almost all of these starts, he's 6 or 7 innings. I don't need to tell any Mets fan how rarely a 6-inning start was, let alone a 7-inning start was last season, which goes to, you talked about 2022 as the last time we had an ace. With Cookie Carrasco and Taijuan Walker and David Peterson and Trevor Williams and all these other guys that just like threw up zeros throughout the season contributed to, was like, listen, we're going to get you 6. I don't know if you're going to need us come playoff time, but that I think is the interesting thing about Alcantara. I trust him if the Mets were to require him to be more dependable than Kodai Senga.
Yeah.
At this point, more dependable than Sean Manaea over 162. I have no idea what to expect from him getting the ball game 1 or 2 in a playoff series, which is why I think so much of this conversation has become about an ace. Look, I think the most important part, and the only other name I think it's worth mentioning on this list, is Nick Pivetta. But the important part to really highlight throughout this conversation, Rich, is that, like, if Scooble's not on the market, I don't really think there's a clear ace out there this offseason. So you're going to have to get creative with who you bring in to improve your run prevention dilemma, David Stearns, which makes it like, are you going after Sandy Alcantara? Are you going after Joe Ryan or Freddie Peralta 1 year, eight? I get mad every time I see Freddie Peralta's name on this list because it's 1 year, $8 million for a guy that was so very clearly the best pitcher on a team that had the best record in baseball last year and is so much more. Like, that fact is so much more the problem than the Dodgers actually spending money when their franchise makes money. I digress. I think you're going to have to get creative. The name I wanted last offseason that ended up being available in February and the Padres took advantage was Nick Pivetta, who signed a 5-year, I believe a $55 million contract. And the Padres, who remain, I guess, just payroll hamstrung at the moment. The CBS case, the CBS Sports case by Max Axisa was that, like, because they've been shedding payroll as much as they have, it cannot be ruled out that a guy with multiple years available at a lower price could yield multiple players that they could plug holes with on a team that clearly is looking to moneyball their way with their payroll going forward. If Nick Pivetta became available, I would be all over that. But I also recognize it's not clear cut that he's available. Other than the names we've talked about, Rich, and I think that's really where where the conversation ends is like it's Skubal, and then there's no other ace on the market, is what we've determined.
Yeah, unless and the forever wild card is like there's a guy that we're not even thinking of that is available that none of us know about. Unlikely, but
so mystery player, like mystery ace.
Mystery ace. Yeah. Who the hell is that? I don't know. I think kind of Hunter Green is probably that guy if he was available. Like he's mystery player. I'd have to scour the league to look, but nobody else jumps to mind. And yeah, I mean they're gonna have to figure it out. I think we keep talking about it. This is gonna be such an interesting offseason because there's no clear answer for anything outside of re-sign Edwin Diaz. I think every other position you can make a debate for 3 to 4 directions to go in. And they're going to have to get really creative. And this is why they make a lot of money. This is why David Stearns isn't the GM. He's the president of baseball operations. Figure it out. And I'm going to be really interested to see what that is. I think they have to add 2 starters externally. Personally, I think one needs to be more in the ace to number 2 pitcher tier. And then, you know, can you get somebody on one of these kind of like 1 year opt out type contract trying to reset their market? A Dylan Cease type if he takes that deal or if there's somebody else like that. And that's how you fortify this rotation. And I'd feel pretty good about that. We don't know if they're going to do that. I'm curious to see if Stearns looks at Peralta. We didn't talk about Peralta too much until you kind of mentioned the fact that he's even available is egregious for a team that was in the NLCS, had the best record in baseball, and he makes no money, and they're still looking to trade him, and they had 0 goddamn pitching outside of him in the playoffs. But, you know, there's that Brewers connection. When he first came over here, he signed and traded for multiple former Brewers. That would be certainly an interesting guy to bring in. And I think you could argue that he'd be the actual ace of the team, regardless if he starts on opening day or not.
Yeah, it'd be really funny if the pitching additions this offseason, like we're not factoring in who he trades, who he gets rid of. It's Freddie Peralta and Brandon Woodruff. We're just literally recreating the Brewers on the Mets.
Yeah.
It'd just be very funny if that's the offseason plan. That they find a home for Senga. They Peterson ends up being like your 4/5 and they go to a 6-man rotation. And it's Freddie Peralta can be your co-ace. Whether that's miscast or not, well, the season will play out, but he can be your 1/1A with Nolan McLean. And then Brandon Woodruff on a Luis Severino type of make good 1-year deal. Yeah, you know,
it would be funny.
Go here for come here for a year, and we'll give you an opt out after a season two. You know,
yeah, it would be funny. Brandon Woodruff does scare the crap out of me just because of the health. He's not been healthy in quite a while.
Agreed. To your point,
would be interesting.
It can't be the only move they make. Like right. Brandon Woodruff, guy who was in the Cy Young conversation, or what a no, Burns won the Cy Young that year.
Burns
guy won, that but Woodruff was in
really
the,
really good.
One of the former co-aces of Stearns's beloved Brewers, you know?
Yep. Like one thing I will say though, is because you mentioned it a couple of times, if Kodai Senga is not on this team next year, I don't think the six man rotation sticking around. That was largely for him. And I think a rotation that had, you know, injury riddled and very particular in his routine, Kodai Senga, in addition to David Peterson coming off a career high in innings, Sean Manaea injured, and Clay Holmes converting from a relief pitcher to a starting pitcher. Not really going to have that as much going into next year. I think if Kodai Senga is around, we probably see that six-man rotation. If he gets dealt, I think they're probably going to go back to the more conventional five-man, at least for large stretches of the year.
Play it out with me. So the two, you want them to add two pitchers, right?
That's how I would do it.
I would explore that option too. So two new pitchers, mm-hmm. Nolan McLean. Those are the three guarantees for next year, right?
Manaea.
Okay, Manaea.
He will be on the roster.
Okay, David Peterson. That's five already. Clay Holmes. Like we're already at six if we're adding two new pitchers. And then I haven't mentioned finding a new home for Senga.
Right. One, are they actually going to add two pitchers? We'll see. Because that maybe I'm getting greedy. Maybe they only think they need one. The other thing I would say is, do one of those guys get converted to a reliever? Do you go into spring saying, let's see what happens? Because last year, half the rotation got hurt in spring training. And you're like, okay, we'll see what happens in camp. We break, you know, maybe Holmes gets hurt, maybe Manaea gets hurt again, and you just go in with the five man without them. I don't think they have to go into the season being so as rigid about it, and they could have some different contingencies that they can do based on how spring training goes.
I don't think you can dedicate payroll to it is the problem, and I don't think you can, like, say they did go out and get two guys. That would either mean two guys then have to go, or Like depth pieces are Tyler McGill, you know, guys like that, you know, the very clear spot starters, stick starters that, you know we can at times count on you for six scoreless innings, probably during the month of April. But like that's your contingency plan. I don't think you could go in if you were to add two guys. Which this is my plan. I personally would go with a six-man rotation, even if Senga's factored in, unless you have an ace. Like, if they get Scooble, then you don't need it. But there's nobody that I need to see. And really, this more comes to a Dodgers conversation. There's nobody I need to see every fifth day. And I think the Dodgers helped that Snell missed most of the season, but they benefited from having a six-man rotation for large parts of the middle of the season. They didn't win as many games, but did they have a very fresh starting rotation come playoff time that allowed them to push their starters deeper and deeper into games. If the Mets were to follow a similar path or just like flood their rotation and their roster with dependable starting pitching, I think you could explore that. Or we haven't even talked about this element yet. If you wanted to explore the opener concept, which is what I'm convinced Clay Holmes is, you could stack some of these guys.
You could piggyback, and there's what if there's a scenario, right? They move Senga just because that relationship is done, and then hey, David Peterson's actually part of the Tarik Skubal trade, and you're trading prospects and Peterson to give them a more reliable arm to swap into the rotation, and you don't have to give up an extra prospect there, and there's your new five-man rotation. You're flip-flopping it that way. I hadn't thought of that before this conversation, but like, who's to say that's not something that's possible?
I'll wrap up here. Can we add two new items to the confidence meter?
Okay.
Percentage chance that Tariq Skubal gets traded to the Mets this offseason.
To the Mets.
To the Mets.
Okay. We can add that. As of now.
What is your answer?
Like 25% right now.
To the Mets.
Just because I don't even know if he's available. Maybe 25%. Maybe that's even too high. Maybe I should go more like 15 to 20%.
So I will be clear. I will say 60%. Because I think if he gets traded, he's getting traded to the Mets. The second item I'd like to add is, will Tariq Skubal get traded this offseason? And I will say like 15%. I think the Tigers are actually going to spend this offseason. They might not spend long term, but they might look to add to a team that's made the playoffs each of the last two seasons. And you'd need an ace at the top. I think they might be in on Bregman. I think they might be in on some other free agents that could become available. They might be looking at the same list that we're looking at and saying, who else can we add to a rotation that has Tariq Skubal at the top? Like, they were in inning 15 against the team in the Mariners that, that's the margin difference between them and a team that very nearly made the World Series. Mm-hmm. I think they see how wide open the American League potentially is and don't want to punt on a year of contention. So I'm at 15 on that. He will be traded at all. If he becomes available, the match, I said this last week, the match just makes entirely too much sense to be with the Mets.
I guess if we're differentiating it that way, then my meter would be much higher. Mine was so low because I was considering, right. I don't know that he's even going to get traded at all. Yes, if he gets traded, I would probably be above 50% that it would be to the Mets, because for what you said, the need, the match, I think there's other big teams that'll get involved in it for sure, because he is the best pitcher. But I'm sure the fucking Dodgers will try to figure it out too. But yeah, if he is traded, I would say they have a 50-50 chance, if not a little bit better.
Yeah. I think that's the way we address the confidence meter. It's, will he get traded? If he's traded, will he get traded to the Mets? And I got to be honest, I'm already adjusting my number. It's 80% if he gets traded, he gets traded to the Mets. I don't like,
confidence.
He's not going to, this isn't a money conversation. It's a prospect conversation. Enough smart people that study the farm systems have put the Mets as a match. You just had one on the Patreon pod this week. It just makes entirely too much sense. And oh, by the way, the last time the Mets blew a lead and had a collapse at the end of the season, they traded for a two-time Cy Young Award-winning lefty that was about to become a free agent from the AL Central. History repeats itself. Hopefully not in the same way that season ended, that first year under Santana.
Yes.
Although the similarity is that being the last season at Citi Field, this might be the last, that being the last season at Shea, this may be the last season at Citi Field for a while, because baseball is not going to exist after 2026.
They have the prospects, and we'll wrap up after this because we could go on about this for 4 hours, I think. They have the prospects. The question is going to be, is David Stearns going to trade them? We haven't seen it yet. I think this is the winner for that, but until he does it, it is a question. So I'm going to be curious. I'm going to be really curious to see how that goes.
The only bail I will shoot David Stearns as far as, because I agree, like, I'm curious to see if he will as well. That was a very aggressive trade deadline. Like, that was the type of trade deadline I wanted him to have. The results didn't happen. And I mean, going as aggressive as he did after Cedric Mullins when Harrison Bader was sitting right there. Like, in theory, that should have been a successful trade deadline. Process-wise, I was mostly okay with it. I also look at this offseason, and he has to know because of what the smoke is. And if he doesn't, his owner is on Twitter. So he absolutely is hearing the smoke and the pressure from certain places. If Tariq Skubal becomes available, go get him. And I think he will. If he isn't, I think we just spent a good 40 minutes breaking down the slim pickings. The plan B, the slim pickings on what an ace is, but the other creative ways the Mets will have to get in having the front of your rotation and the rest of your rotation be better in 2026.
It's going to be very, very interesting. All right. thank you guys for listening to another episode. Thank you, Andrew, for joining me as always. Before we head out again, please, if you're watching us on YouTube, please subscribe, like, share, all that fun stuff. Follow us over on Twitter. I'm not going to call it X, at @just_Mets. Our newsletter is free. It comes out every single weekday in the off season. In the regular season, it comes out literally all 7 days a week, and that is free. You can upgrade to a paid subscription on Substack or on Patreon. That gives you access to not only our Patreon episodes of this show, where we have different guests on every Thursday, also my off-season coffee show that comes out every Saturday morning, and bonus deep dive articles on the newsletter. $5 a month gets you all of that. And finally, if you were listening to this on one of the podcast app, Apple, Spotify, any of those, please make sure you are subscribed and give us a 5-star rating and review. Andrew, any last words for you this week?
None for me. Let's go, Mets. Tune in for my first ever Patreon pod later this week, this bonus episode. I'll keep the guests a bit secret until later this week, but it'll be very Tigers and Scooble centric, because I want to get the Tigers' perspective on the Scooble conversation and the rumors and the reports and whether the Mets actually would be the ideal trade target. But again, check that out. And week two in the books, Rich. Thank you to everybody that's coming along for the ride with us.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, everybody. Can't wait for that episode on Thursday. We will be back with you soon.